Hello, this is Jesse Scardina, news writer for SearchVirtualDesktop.com and SearchEnterpriseDesktop.com. I'm on site in San Francisco at VMworld 2019. I'm sitting here with Steve Athanas, the associate CIO for UMass Lowell and president of the VMware user group. Steve, how are you?
I'm well, Jesse. It's been a fun couple days. Thanks for having me.
How many VMworlds is this for you? This is my first.
Oh wow! Well, welcome to VMworld.
Thank you. It's been a lot.
This question should go the other way around. Like, how are you doing? How
tired. Yeah, you know, getting there. It's Tuesday today. It feels like the fifth Friday of this conference. But it's been good. A lot of information. A lot of new stuff coming out in the end user computing space. But how many of these have you been to?
Man, 11.
Okay.
I think this is 11 because I started coming in 2009, right? So that would have meant 10 was last year, and so now we're on to, I'm into my second decade. The thing that I love about VMworld more so than any other conference that I've been to, and I've been to my fair share, right, is the sort of ease of connecting with people, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that VMUG brings to an event like this, is providing that sort of forum and frankly, in some cases, a physical location to just get together and connect. But everybody here is really open to talking to each other. In fact, it's weird. I was just talking to somebody else. Like, when you find that one person that doesn't really want to talk to you, you're like, that was so weird.
Right.
You know, like, why? I said hi, and they, like, looked away from me, and that was odd.
I mean, I have the word press on my badge, so that happens to me a bit more as far as people who might not want to talk to me.
Sure.
So, we're used to rejection in the media industry. But like I said, plenty of news coming out this week around end-user computing, around Workspace ONE. Obviously, VMware entered the conference with two very large acquisitions, platform as a service provider, Pivotal, and then security vendor Carbon Black, which has really seemed to be the largest or most popular piece of news this week as far as people I've talked to, and I believe you have a similar take there.
Yeah, so I think the Carbon Black piece is really interesting, but let me comment on that, it being the piece that people are more interested in. I think it depends on what your job role is and what your background is, because I've talked to a bunch of folks that are closer to the dev side, and all they want to talk about is Pivotal and Spring and PKS and Project Pacific and how Kubernetes is sort of transforming the VMware story. I'm not that close to that, right?
Yeah.
For me, in my role, being responsible for infrastructure and a big piece of infrastructure, I mean, for the past several years is security, right? It's something we're always worried about. It's the thing I stay up at night. Every time I see a breach on the news, I'm like,
right.
Oh, you know.
We don't want to be them today.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But for the grace of the tech gods, so go I, right? And I think the Carbon Black story is really interesting, right? For two reasons. One, it's interesting to me just from local news perspective, because they're based in Waltham and I'm out of the Boston area, right? So it's like, local kid gets bought by VMware, right?
Right.
So that's an interesting piece. But the also, I think the Carbon Black story is really interesting in how VMware has cast a vision, and very quickly, I might add, they announced the acquisition on what, the
Thursday or Friday.
I mean, it was on the earnings. I was listening to the earnings call or earnings webcast, and they were like, "We." I was like, "What?
Whoa, yeah,
what?
Exactly."
VMworld starts this
yeah.
weekend, right? So they, they announced that, and then they very quickly put out a vision that they see that Carbon Black technology, they see that intrinsic security piece being installed across their portfolio. Now, for me, that is the most compelling security story I've heard in quite a while, for I think one key reason, which is I don't know any other vendor in the entire tech ecosphere right now. Ecosphere? That's not a thing.
Yeah,
ecosystem?
It might work.
I'm
pointing for me, yeah.
Ecosphere, that is copyright 2019. that security ecosystem, I think they have more visibility to more transactions happening across the enterprise that's leveraging VMware than anybody else in the game. So let me...
What do you mean by transactions?
Yeah, let me walk through that, right? So if I say transactions, like operations,
yeah, okay.
I.O., right?
Right.
Like everything that's happening on the machine. So let's just sort of step through that for a minute. So at UMass Lowell, the entirety of our workload, I mean, maybe one or two point exceptions, but the entirety of our workload in the data center is running on vSphere.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, you know, 99% plus of our environment is running on vSphere. But we also have NSX installed.
Right.
Right. So now, not only does vSphere have the ability to see what those VMs are doing at that hypervisor layer as I'm talking to hardware, but I can also see the network stack in between them and I can enforce policy there. We're also using, in our case, we're using Horizon VDI. So a lot of my end users are using a VM running in vSphere presented through Horizon,
right?
And if you add Workspace ONE to the mix, now my physical clients, my PCs, my mobile devices, are also being managed. So that means I'm trying to think of where in the where in sort of the stack in an enterprise's services, VMware wouldn't be able to see what's happening and enforce security policy on that device. So that to me is transformative. Right, and the way that they're trying to leverage AI, or they are leveraging AI, and in my mind, right, I don't think they've really said this out loud yet. I hope it's where they're going, but being able to connect all those things and not just report on security issues, but proactively manage them. Right, like I'm not going to let the bad thing happen. Let me rewind for a second. I find most security technology these days is reactive,
right?
So I'm trying to remedy a problem that has already happened, right? Like, I have already been phished. I have already clicked on the link, or I have already somehow gotten malware installed, and now we're trying to clean it up and remove it. If instead we could say, I know what it looks like from a processor and an IO level. I know what it looks like when this stuff is getting installed. I'm just not going to let it happen,
right?
So that is huge. And then if you can take that to the next level and say, boy, I have this installed across my entire environment. When I see something happen over here, at the endpoint, I can stop it from happening. I can report on it. And I can also quarantine everything that user has touched in the past 24 hours.
To make sure it doesn't spread apart.
Correct. Because I don't know, maybe I did miss something. So quarantine it all and let's get somebody in to look at that. Like that is powerful to me.
How well would that work? I mean, you mentioned, UMass Lowell really using VMware across all its systems.
Yeah.
What about an organization that isn't that sprawling with VMware products? Or you mentioned before we got on mic here about how some chief security officers might find that that technique might not work for them. And the idea of having multiple security vendors and having that sort of layered structure there to help prevent these sort of phishing attacks and everything. So how would this benefit those other VMware customers that might not be as embedded into those products?
You mean like a traditional vSphere customer?
Right.
Yeah. So let's assume that I just have vSphere going and let's just go full legacy right here, right? So we're doing everything on premises. We're doing everything in our local data center. We're running vSphere. So I'm running an email server, which... I mean, in 2019, I think that's sort of a dying art, right? And I say that sort of lovingly and with some sadness. That's how I came up. I was the Windows and Exchange admin, right? But if I'm doing that, right, and I'm managing SharePoint, I'm managing file services, I'm managing all that, I'm never talking from your machine peer-to-peer to my machine. It's going through the data center. It's going through the server. So we still have visibility to that transaction. There's very few enterprise apps that do a peer-to-peer connection. So I still think you get a ton of benefit out of that. I think it's one of these, like the 80-20 rule. Like I can get, or maybe it's even 90-10, I can get 90% of visibility if I'm watching things happening in my data center. And then these other technologies allow me to wrap that around to get to the 100% mark. So I still think there's benefit in that. And again, the way Carbon Black, and to be fair, I'm not, I have no architectural mastery of Carbon Black, but from my very limited understanding, the way it enforces, sort of this let the good stuff run and don't let the bad stuff run, instead of trying to scan and find the bad stuff, is I think the right way to handle that. Now, to your point about CISOs, to me that is the risk that VMware faces here. Is CISOs, I think by nature of what they do and their training, are risk averse, right? Which, and let me be clear, we want them to be that way. Like, I don't want a risky CISO, right?
So it's like a bad SNL sketch.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Let's roll the dice on that and see if we get hacked, right? So no, of course not. so they tend to be risk averse. And the model, the security model over years, you know, Sanjay put up that slide yesterday morning of however many hundreds of security vendors. I think he says something like 5,000 different players in the space. I think it's because the security model has for years been this sort of best of breed philosophy, which to me is a bit of a misnomer because it takes a lot of effort to manage that many point solutions. But that's what we've done. We have a point solution for firewall, a point solution for malware, a point solution for PII identification, a point solution for transport encryption. So we have all these different tools, and then somebody's got to learn how to use those. And it's, you know, often you're like, you know, you're looking around the office, you're like, you're going to be the firewall person, and you're going to be... And so what happens is you have these discrete pieces that I don't believe give you an integrated picture very often of how the enterprise is secured, right? Now, are CISOs going to sort of buy into this model of I want my security from one vendor, right? I've heard CISOs, not recently, mind you, but I've heard CISOs in the past say you don't want that because in case one fails at detecting something, you want somebody else to pick it up. I just don't know where the balance and benefit is, and this is all very new. I mean, it was announced yesterday, right? But I don't know where the balance and benefit is between being able to see more and have, you know, less manual log review and everything else going through that versus that sort of like, you know, we've got a multi-vendor stack of security solutions. Right. I think there is going to be some balance, and I think you're going to have some CISOs that lean on the no, I want to do it with this best of breed, and then others are going to say, no, I see how transformative that is, and we're willing to move forward with sort of that holistic view of security.
And moving on to some of the features that were announced and unveiled this week around Workspace ONE, again, before we got mic'd up, we touched on them briefly. There's a end-user new capability around a virtual assistant that can help with onboarding, device management, kind of those low-hanging issues with HR and IT that can really move things along and automate things. And then on the IT side, there was, I believe they're calling it the digital employee experience management, which kind of goes to what you said, can proactively alert IT of phishing problems, of malware attacks.
Yep. Well, I think they were even going deeper than that. They were talking about like system stability issues, not just security. Like, oh, you know, you're likely to crash, or you know, sort of that.
Right. Apps are about to crash. Yeah.
Yeah. The way I sort of in my head is like, you know, the old, or I say old. It's not old. I don't have it on my car, but that pre-collision stuff that like you're about to have an accident, so let's tighten your seatbelt and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that level and reporting on that. Right.
So where do you stand on how those features might help Workspace ONE customers and is there anything that you were hoping to see this week that you still haven't seen yet from VMware?
Well, let me answer the first part of that first. So, I think those are interesting, cool features that sort of incrementally move the ball forward. I'm curious. The virtual assistant stuff is cool, right? And I like the demo they showed of that. I'm going to reserve judgment on it because there's a lot of having looked at some of that technology from other vendors in the past, there is a ton of work that goes into getting that AI to give you the right answer, right?
And that the company needs to do that. IT and HR need to preload that, basically.
Right, and it's not just loading it like you can't just tell the thing like, here's the four, the demo they used for folks that didn't see it showed a new employee, it was like they ordered their laptop and they clicked through and it... And that's great, and you could really do that, but you can't just like type in the virtual assistant like here are the four laptops we have. You have to have it understand, you know, what the business rules are around who gets what, because in most organizations, not every employee has access to every possible laptop or every possible
or every
desktop.
Application too,
and it depends on their job role, and so you're filtering by that. You would never want to let you would never encourage a high octane software engineer. You never encourage them to get like the sort of very lightweight, very low powered, super portable tablet, right? Like, it's really hard to do your job on that.
That a journalist might use. I need Microsoft Word and Box, and that's it.
But yeah, if you're like compiling code, or if you're an engineer and you're doing 3D modeling, like your detachable screen tablet is not the best tool for that. So all that has to be built into this virtual assistant so it can answer those questions. And that is where, and by the way, VMware is not guilty of anything that any other vendor doesn't do also.
Exactly.
But they're showing this really awesome end state. And my question is, you know, what is the effort level to get to that point? And how much labor did you put into that versus how much labor you were spending answering the phone and saying, yeah, here's your four laptop options?
So with that, there's, you know, there's that aspect of how much work do you need to do to actually get these new features to do what they showed you in the demos.
Yep.
And same thing with, you know, application migration and all that. You know, we see these shiny demos at all tech conferences where it seems like a plug and play. You license this from us and you'll be able to move your apps in seconds. But it seems like there's a lot more work that an organization needs to do beforehand. It changes based on the industry, based on the organization. But I'm just curious, how much time does an organization need to put in to get ready for a migration or for some of this new technology?
Yeah, so I think if I could answer that question succinctly, Jesse, I think I'd probably be the highest paid CIO in the world,
yeah,
right?
Have your own company at this point.
Right, exactly. It's, that depends entirely on each individual organization, how their environment is structured, who their stakeholders are, how willing their stakeholders are to be on board with the vision. You know, but that can take years.
Yeah.
Right? Years, right? And here's how I know
it's
that.
It's how we've gotten decades of legacy systems.
Right. I mean, it's easy. I don't have to go very far to picture that. If we walked this show floor, right, and asked everybody to show us their laptop, what percentage do you think would be running Windows 7? Because it's
a good
not,
amount.
It's not zero.
Yeah. No,
right?
I've done that story. A good amount still. Yeah.
Right. And so now everybody's looking at January 15th, like, oh my goodness, we got to get off Windows 7. It's not going to be supported anymore. But how long ago did Windows 7 drop?
Yeah.
Like, how many years ago did that drop?
I don't want to tell you what grade I was in.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. So that the fact that people are still running Windows 7 in 2019 just shows you how hard it is to do that. And that's a very simple desktop migration. When you're talking about moving data center architecture and
right.
making sure that your line of business applications are perfectly functional and stable on a new platform, I mean, it takes years, right?
Yeah.
And for good reason. I would never want to be the customer of a company that just willy-nilly was like, hey, let's upgrade this, see what happens.
True.
I mean, it might break your banking information, but you don't care, right?
Yeah.
You know, I care very much.
Everything we've talked about today and what we've seen during the main keynotes, it really has this trend of providing enterprise security with, I mean, I even believe some of the sessions and keynotes touched directly on bringing a consumer experience to employees and end users. There's those two ideas butt heads though a
yeah.
bit. I mean, consumer experience is great, but it can affect security. And if
yep.
you improve security, it can affect end user experience. So with the trend of trying to marry those two, how do you see that working for vendors like VMware and for the customers?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting, right? Because I'm not sure that I'm fully on board with this idea of consumer simple, right?
Yeah.
So, like, my phone, I have an iPhone, like, I don't know, some ridiculous percentage of the world, right? That, you know, that is very easy to use. But I'm also very limited on what I can do on my iPhone, right? So, I mean, is there an app for doing spreadsheets on it? Yeah, I have Office 365. I have Excel on here. Do you know anybody that uses Excel on it?
Of course not. Yeah.
It's not great, right?
Yeah.
So I'm very limited in what I can do on that versus a PC, right? But, you know, and it doesn't matter. I say PC. It could be a Mac. It can be Windows. It doesn't matter. Using that, that's if that's the definition of consumer simple, right? I mean, I don't know that it is that consumer simple, right?
Yeah.
And I know a lot of consumers who have harmed themselves greatly using consumer simple technology, right? So, you know, as a great example, right? We happen to live next door to a couple who are just great friends of ours. But you know, he called me one time and said, "Hey, Microsoft is on my computer and they're trying to fix a problem." And I was like, "No, they're not."
Yeah,
like
right.
No, they're not. Like I actually dropped the phone and ran across my yard and like got in there and like yanked the cable out of his. You know, I was like, "No, they're not." But that's consumer simple. It's his
yeah.
home computer, right? So, you know. I think that is a bit of a false idea of consumer simple. Right now, let's get to the meat of the question, which is, are they opposing ideals? Yes. Is my iPhone consumer simple? Yes. Could I run a billion-dollar company on, you know, exclusively, you know, consumer simple technology like my phone? No, I really couldn't do that. So when you need to do more, when you need to have engineers, when you need to have product marketing specialists, when you need to have research done, you need bigger, more complex tools to do it, and then securing them becomes a more complex job.
Right.
And also, let's not forget that when we're in an enterprise, we're trying to secure the information and data of, number one, our company, number two, our customers, and number three, our employees. And by the way, it's not in that order for every company. It depends what the order is, right? But that's a lot of stuff we're trying to secure, and it's the most important thing in the world to us. So when we add security to that, it makes things more complicated. And I've never seen it not be that way. I mean, even something simple as email phishing protection, right? It's like you click on the link and it's like, do you really want to click on this link? And then you get people who are like, of course I want to click on the link. Why? Why? Well, yeah, but maybe you did, but three cubes down from you, that person clicked on that link and gave up their banking information or our banking information.
Right. So. And vendors are trying to make some of those security features as simple as possible.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, there's no way to make it that simple. I mean, there's no way to, you know, two-factor authentication is two-factor for a reason.
Correct. And you know, and people get annoyed by that sort of extra step. One of the ones that recently, a real story out of my job, we recently put on all inbound email a little flag at the top, which I'm sure you've seen all the time, which is, you know, caution external email. We got a lot of complaints about that. People are like, you're insulting my intelligence. And we're like, yeah, but last week we had a phishing message get through. Frankly, we were able to stop it and remove it before anybody clicked on that link. But it's a real threat that we're trying to manage, and we're using all the tools in our arsenal. I would love it if we had a magic wand to make everything as simple as an iPhone and secure, but that's not.
Only as secure as your dumbest employee, right?
Well, I'm not gonna say that with a microphone on me, but I'll say that I'm waiting for Hogwarts to get into the security business, because I think we'll be in good shape there.
Well, I think that's a good place to leave this. Steve, I appreciate you taking the time, providing this insight. Good or safe travels back to the Boston area, and good luck Riverhawks this year.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.